And just that slow, simple Texas where it's like you underestimate them, but they're two steps ahead of you.
Welcome to the Bunkhouse Podcast, broadcasting from the confluence of outdoor recreation and nature connectivity. I'm your host, Josh Crumpton, founder of Spoke Hollow Outdoors and the Los Savaje Food Truck. My life as a rancher, guide, foodie, and conservationist has provided the opportunity to meet some really great people. And the Bunkhouse is where we get to introduce them to you. Here we are, episode number 16, and it's the new year. The holidays have passed us by. Hopefully y'all celebrated them with loved ones and told stories over tables full of wild game. The beginning of the year can be bittersweet for many whitetail hunters in the north zone of Texas because the season is coming to an end. If you're in the south zone, you've got a little bit more time, but it's still right around the corner. Either way, as you go through the motions of cleaning and putting away y'all's gear, I encourage you to reflect on the season gone by and start planning for the season to come. Oh, and by the way, the upland season in Texas is still rolling strong until the end of February, so call a friend with a dog and get out there. I want to take a moment for a couple of shout-outs. Edgar Diaz over at Sightline Provisions, looks like you guys had a great year. I loved seeing all the cool collabs and all the great new products. If you don't know Sightline, you should. My gal Jam, here's to you becoming a Texas Hunters of Color ambassador. Jimmy, Lydia, you had a great pick on that one. The Turtle Boys and Turtle Gals at Turtle Box. That Mossy Oak collab, muy caliente. You guys are taking the world by storm, and it's a blast to watch. To all the dove hunters who got into them during the second dove season, that secret dove season, good on you. And of course, I want to send a little bit of love to the duck hunters, hitting all those early mornings as duck hunting is still rolling along. And finally, here's a special shout out to all my exes that don't live in Texas. It's very considerate of y'all to not force me to have to hang my hat in Tennessee. Later in this episode, we visit with my good friend Sam Nelson from the one and only Bar You Eat. But first, let's check in on some Spoke Hollow updates. We're deep in the upland season in Wimberley. January is just about sold out because we're off site for most of the month. If you want to catch up with us, your best bet is to come out west where we'll be hunting mule deer and flushing them scalies at our far west outpost. Can't make it there? Don't fret. We're back in Wimberley for February, and if you get on it, you could snag a spot before the season comes to an end. Fishing on the Guadalupe River is in full effect, and we're running rafts for those Texas-sized trout. Want to take a ride? Give us a call or jump over to www.hookandfield.com to get your trip booked. In late summer, our pal Chef Bijou Thomas visited Wimberley, and we gave him the whole enchilada of a hill country tour. You can join us as we take him fishing, foraging, cooking, and dining around the hill country by checking out episode number 5 on his new show, A Road Less Eaten, airing on select cable providers, Roku, and Outside Watch. What's happening over at Los Savaje Food Truck? Last week, I stopped by my food truck at Desert Door Distillery for my weekly hamburguesa and overheard a rumor that someone found an extra stash of a little gem known as the Driftwood Cowboy. You might be wondering what a Driftwood Cowboy is. A Driftwood Cowboy is a special bottling of Sotol aged in a set of barrels hand-selected by Garrison Brothers Master Distiller and used to create the Garrison Brothers Uncut Unfiltered Cowboy Bourbon. These barrels add unique notes to the Desert Door flavor profile, resulting in a rich, vibrant Sotol bursting with caramel, vanilla, molasses, and baking spice. But back to my burger. I'm not sure if y'all have heard, but Los Savaje serves up one of the best burgers in the hill country. This smash-style burger comprises of two Nalgai antelope and bacon blended patties, melted queso americana, escabeche, onions, and sauce especial, all resting between two sesame buns. Yeah, like I said before, you should probably be on your way over there to get one right now. BIPOC in the outdoors, what's going on over there? Black Outside visited Spoke Hollow Ranch this past week. They're on a mission to expand outdoor programming for the black youth in Central Texas, seeking to diversify the outdoors and cultivate a new generation of participants and leaders. They achieve their mission through three primary programs. The CR Bloom Project focuses on providing healing justice for youth impacted by incarceration. Camp Founder Girls, America's first historically black summer camp for girls,
provides an immersive week-long overnight camp centered on bravery, confidence, creativity, and strength. Finally, Brothers with the Land is a program focused on connecting Black boys to the power of the outdoors through leadership, healing, and mentorship. Founder Alex Bailey and program director Thurman Hogan brought 9 young men from Brothers with the Land to get connected with nature here at Smoke Hollow, and we spent the afternoon hiking and learning to fly fish. Let's check in with Alex to learn a little bit more.
Hello?
Alex, how's it going, man?
Doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I was calling to check in with you. It was awesome having you and the kids out last week.
Yeah, it was a beautiful experience. I mean, weather was perfect. Kids, lots of laughter, lots of joy, lots of pictures. So it was an amazing experience.
Yeah, so the program I was telling people, this is Brothers with the Land that came to visit the ranch, right?
Yes. One of our 3 programs for Black Outside.
Yeah. Tell me about Black Outside. Like what was the impetus for you starting that?
Yeah, it started back when I was in college. I was actually a summer camp counselor, worked at a pretty affluent camp in the Northeast. And I loved my experience there, but I left there yearning and wishing there was more diversity. I wish more Black and African American youth could experience the magic of summer camp. So fast forward, after spending about 7 years in the education system, finally just realized, like, we need to create the program that I was envisioning, right? And so that's where Black Outside came to be. The name is actually, a lot of people haven't caught this, but the name is actually a play on words, kind of like back outside, but Black Outside. And I really believe, given the history of Black people in the United States, we've been outside. The Buffalo Soldiers, Harriet Tubman, even Dr. Martin Luther King was actually a huge outdoorsman. If you listen to his speeches, it makes sense. And so knowing that, I really wanted to honor that legacy and create a program that really cultivated a unique experience for Black youth in the outdoors.
How long ago did you establish the program?
Yeah, so I got together with some community educators and leaders in 2019. And so we're kind of a toddler program. Some folks have called us, still growing.
Well, that's a fantastic place to be, because that just means that you have an entire future ahead of you to make it into something that is big beyond big. Was Brothers with the Land part of the original program? Because there's the 3 programs I was telling people on the show, CR Bloom, Camp Founder Girls, and Brothers with the Land. Were they all 3 founded at the same time underneath Black Outside?
Oh, that's a great question. So it's a kind of funny, quick coincidence of this. So when I started Black Outside, or we started Black Outside, our community, my first vision was like, I want to start a camp for boys, right? I was like, I want to do this. And then as we were emerging, we learned a story about Camp Founder Girls, the first summer camp for Black girls, which started in our home city of San Antonio in 1924. So when we heard about it, one of my co-founders, I was like, we got to resurrect this. We got to bring this back to life. So we focused our energy, our resources, and creating this camp for Black girls. Then along the way, that same summer, I met this amazing Black woman named Camber, who's from San Antonio, and she wanted to start a program to honor the life and legacy of her younger cousin, Charles Roundtree, who unfortunately was killed in a police shooting at a very young age, and had this whole vision called the Bloom Project for youth impacted by incarceration. So we partnered there, and I was like, would you have the honor of being kind of part of this Black Outside collective that's emerging? And so all that to say, Brothers with the Land was kind of put on the back burner until about summer of 2021, when we really got another group of boys together for our first camping trip. One thing I will add, though, our first actual trip for Black Outside was a group of boys, but we just didn't really name it. It was just kind of a pilot experience. And so it's kind of full circle that, like our last program that kind of emerged was, again, our Black boys, and that became Brothers with the Land later on.
Well, it's great being out there with the kids. And, these young men, this is my second year, because I had the honor of being able to fish with you guys last year out at Camp Capers. And then this year, being able to have you guys here at my ranch at Spoke Hollow, it was really a fantastic experience.
Yes.
Tell me how fly fishing came to integrate into the program, and sort of what it is, what's your objective when you go out on an outing like we participated in the other day?
It's wild. Going back to our boys, they had mentioned for a while during camping trips, like, oh, we'd love to go fishing. And I was like, yeah, we'll try to make that happen. And it started with myself. I was at an outdoor conference, met some brothers, and these brothers walked up to me and they're like, hey, you want to go fly fishing? I was like, sure, I've never been. I never experienced that. And you can relate to this, Josh. That first time I put on waders and just felt the water like rushing along my legs, like it was that moment I was like, oh, our kids got to experience this, right? And I was like, even though I don't even know how to fly fish, I got to figure out a way. And so kind of came back, wrote down some plans, and later that the group of brothers that I went fly fishing with later became the film Black Waters, which I became a part of. So I became part of this fly fishing team because of that experience. But circling back to Black Outside, when I felt that water against my legs and just the feeling of waders, I wanted our youth to experience that. And so I worked for about 6 to 8 months with some partners to get the gear and everything ready. And then we crossed paths and I was like, all right, let's do it. I think I can bring in the instructors to make this happen. And it was winter of 2022, the experience that you had, that was our first fly fishing outing. And it was a huge success for the boys. They really enjoyed it.
Yeah, the biggest, you know what I think the biggest problem with it is, I want more time. I want to be able to do it like 3 days in a row.
Yeah, for sure. You know?
So do you plan on incorporating fly fishing, or have you incorporated into any of the outings like in Colorado or the camping trips that you guys have done?
Yeah, that's a great question. So actually, it's funny. Our girls saw like pictures of the boys fly fishing. And they were like, how come we haven't been? So they were kind of frustrated about that. So in April, they're going to go during their like kayaking outdoor river day. And so all I can say, we definitely want to start weaving it in. We've like really explored in the next year, even bringing fly fishing, maybe even to Big Bend potentially for an opportunity, right? Or just weaving into some of our traditional camping trips, mm-hmm. Where we can bring that gear out there and just, you know, camp out, either car camping or even like backpacking and primitive camping, depending on the location. To do some fly fishing out there. So all that to say, I think we see like the levels that you can take this, and our kids and our youth and our team are really excited.
Well, we're 100% here to help incorporate fly fishing and whatever kind of deep level nature connectivity we can offer for you guys. You know, it's an open gate, and I appreciate you taking the time to visit with me, and I appreciate you for sharing the space and your program with us.
Yeah, it was an honor. It was an honor to, you know, we believe in connecting to the land, right? And it was an honor to connect to the land alongside you. It was just such a beautiful day.
Right on. Can't wait to see you out here next time. Thanks.
Yes.
You've got mail. Jeff from Austin, Texas asks, what do you recommend for my first hunting experience? Well, Jeff, I'm a little partial to shotgunning. I recommend dove hunting. And here's why. Dove hunting is the first season to open in Texas, and it's incredibly social. A lot of fun. You get to get out into the field. You spend time with loved ones. Typically, it's punctuated with a fantastic meal at the end. The pressure's pretty low, and the shot opportunities can be fantastic. On top of that, when cleaning dove, they're not as bloody as, say, processing an entire deer. The opportunities are pretty easy to find and low cost. Shotgun shells are cheap, and buying an introductory shotgun can be something that doesn't have to break the bank as well. I would, however, recommend that you do a couple of things. One is be sure to take a hunter safety course, even though you can defer for 1 year when hunting with someone who has taken a course. I recommend you go ahead and take the course. It doesn't take long, and it sets you off on the right path. I would also recommend that you try to get out to a clay range. I'd say about 3 months before season, try to go to a range once a week or every other week for a total of maybe, say, 6 to 12 visits to the clay range and shoot like a box of shells each time you go. Because though the opportunities are easy for finding dove, hitting one is a whole other story. Let's take a peek at what's coming across my news feed. A couple of key things that recently caught my eye. So here we go with In the News. CWD in Kentucky. On December 7th, Kentucky found its first ever case of chronic wasting disease when a whitetail hunter in Ballard County submitted tissue from a 2.5-year-old buck. This finding, of course, has significant implications for Kentucky, but is no surprise to anyone watching trends. According to Kentucky Fish and Wildlife Commissioner Rich Storm, though they had hoped the day would never come, their team of experts first developed a CWD response plan more than 20 years ago and has been enhancing through the years using the best available science. What is CWD? Otherwise known as chronic wasting disease, this is a disease found in some deer, elk, and moose populations. CWD damages portions of the brain and typically causes progressive loss of body condition, behavioral changes, excessive salivation, and eventually death. CWD is among one of the largest threats to the U.S. deer population. An owl cull down in the Northwest. According to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, spotted owls in the Pacific Northwest are facing a population decline. One significant threat to the spotted owl is the presence of the non-native barred owl, which since around the 1950s has been expanding its range into the Pacific Northwest. These barred owls are outcompeting the spotted owl for food and nesting areas, therefore diminishing the population. The solution? Blast some barred owls? I'm joking. Well, maybe I'm not. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed shooting 500,000 barred owls over the next three decades, representing about 30% of the Northwest population. Does this mean open season on barred owls? I think not. Under the current proposal, land managers must petition the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to let them remove the owls under the agency's protocol, training, specifications, and permit. Will it work? In four study areas in Oregon, Washington, and Northern California, killing barred owls brought spotted owls to almost stable populations, whereas in neighboring control populations, spotted owls continued to decline by 12%. This study and its efforts are a great example of using one of Aldo Leopold's five tools of conservation, the often overlooked gun. Let's talk Texas. In a rapidly urbanizing state with limited public lands, gaining access to the outdoors can take time and effort. Texas Parks and Wildlife Department works with private landowners to solve the problem by signing lease agreements allowing public river access across private lands. The effort is entitled River Access and Conservation Area Program, and leases open these areas for fishing and launching non-motorized boats like kayaks and canoes. Recently, Texas Parks and Wildlife signed on four essential properties that interest me. The Brazos River was called Rio de los Brazos de Dios by the Spaniards, which translates to the River of the Arms of God. And it's easy to see why they would have called it that. The Brazos is America's 14th longest river, coming in at 860 miles. If you think that's impressive, get this. The watershed extends a whopping 1,280 miles, stretching from the headwaters on Blackwater Draw near Clovis, New Mexico, down to the Texas Gulf. TPWD has upped the game on the Brazos by adding two new access points, one at Fuller's Folly River Ranch and another downstream near Weatherford, Texas, at Sandy Bottoms River Company, creating a 4.1-mile float just 45 minutes from Fort Worth. This float should provide a great day of fishing for bass, drum, cat, and sunfish species. So load up, roll out, and get wild on the Brazos. If you think the Brazos is impressive, check this out. The Colorado River, with its 862 river miles, is the 11th longest river in America. But this river is particularly special to Texans because its source and mouth are both located inside the great state of Texas, making it the longest river in Texas. A fun fact about the Colorado River is early Europeans often confused it with the Brazos. When Francisco Vacas de Coronado first encountered these rivers, he named the Brazos Colorado and the Colorado the Brazos. Later, the river names were swapped, making the Colorado the Brazos and the Brazos the Colorado. Pretty confusing, right? But I can tell you what's clear. The new access point near Bastrop is called the Horseshoe, and it's pretty awesome. What's so cool about the Horseshoe is that it opens up two new Colorado River floats. One is 7.4 miles and starts upstream at Big Weberville Park, and the second is 6.8 miles headed downstream to Utley Boat Ramp. And finally, let's talk Texas trout. Anglers have a fantastic opportunity for rainbow trout fishing at Camp Waco Springs on the Guadalupe River. This little spot between New Braunfels and Sattler offers nearly half a mile of accessible riverbank, distinguished by alternating pools and riffles. And it'll be open until March 2nd. Remember, Thanks to Texas Parks and Wildlife River Access and Conservation Area Program, all these access points are no fee and free to everyone. As I said earlier, Sam Nelson, SK, the Bogan, my compadre from another madre and founder of Bar You Eat, visited the ranch. This guy is the real deal, mountain man, river rat, global adventurer, and entrepreneur. I've known Sam for a while now. I've enjoyed watching him grow his business, and he has in turn been cheering as we build out the Spoke Hollow universe. We talked about Sam's journey into the world of hunting and fishing back in Bunkhouse episode number 5. This time we're joined by Chris Cantrell as we discuss Colorado, van life, and dive a little bit deeper into Bar You Eat. Grab a glass, pour a strong one, kick back, and, as always, let's get this thing started. Sam Nelson, Bogan Sam, the Bogan, it's good to have you here.
I wish I could say the same thing.
So, Sam, living in Steamboat, Colorado, did you have to buy a Subaru before you moved to Colorado?
Yeah, I did have to buy a Subaru beforehand. Street cred is important to me.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a Tacoma gives you more cred, though.
That's a big Subaru. I wasn't ready for the big Subaru.
Yeah.
Got to start small.
No, he's got that now. Don't you have that now?
I have a Tacoma now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had the poor man's Tacoma for years.
What's that?
The Nissan Subaru. Frontier.
Oh, nice. I thought you were going to say Subaru Outback.
No.
Yeah, no, Nissan Frontier. That is the poor version of it.
The poor man's Tacoma.
Yeah, I feel like you're pretty much not allowed to live in Colorado.
Yeah, the things attached to your car have to be worth double the price of your car.
That is the
minimum.
Rule.
Minimum.
Yeah.
Sam and I have been over at Los Avaje at the food truck a bunch this week. He came to record podcasts and work on some collaborative stuff, and we just hung out at Desert Door and ate food instead.
Is food truck life like van life?
Is food truck life like van life? You know,
like
you got
the food truck and van life, and you got your home and a restaurant. Like, do they?
Well, I don't know. Here's what I'm going to say. First of all, we've got two experts on van life here. One, you're from Colorado, so obviously you're an expert. Chris is full-time RVer. Matthew's stumbling around somewhere in the kitchen.
RVers, that's a stretch.
Yes, it's not an RVer. He's full-time homeless.
It's a 40-year-old truck camper. RV it's makes it sound glamorous, like, oh, you're in an Airstream. No, I'm in a 1984 six-pack standard cab over truck camper.
Say it slower,
with
please.
With two dogs.
Can you say that slower?
1984 six-pack standard
deeper
cab over truck bed camper.
Did you all feel that?
I bought it for $800 off Craigslist.
I'm not even going to ask.
How many followers do you have?
None.
You should. You should have a lot.
I don't.
That is cool. Some hard van life.
Nobody wants to see this on OnlyFans, so that's why I don't have any followers.
I would see it.
Yeah, I might pay. I might. But I don't have to.
I'm not in the business of giving refunds.
You're the
people sign up and they're like, I want my money back.
Van life, it's funny, like you don't hear as much about van life anymore, but for a while that was like hashtag van life. I'm just gonna go out and live my best life out there and be free, and this is great.
I think I might know why the food truck thing feels normal to you, though, because didn't you start van life? Like, aren't you the originator?
I don't want to talk about that.
Of van life?
I heard that
before.
We're not getting into
people
this.
People made van life cool. You were making it uncool. What was that like?
I spent a lot of time van lifing, but no, I had to do some very tawdry things back in those days.
Come on, give us like one little taste of Josh's early van life before he got food truck.
I will tell you that when I lived in an RV, like that was and traveled, that was some of the most fun times of my life. Like I got eventually I kind of like stopped in New Braunfels, Texas, and I lived by the river, like a van down by the river. I was much like and I just woke up every morning and swam.
Like, I think that that's the deal with van life. And like, I want to make fun of van life as much as possible, but I can't, because like the idea is that like the badass part of it is it's like this freedom and freedom to be in the outdoors and freedom to travel. And the idea that you just pick up and leave wherever and go wherever you want.
It's in my genes. My dad van lifed it back in the 70s.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Did you know that before you got into the camper?
Yeah. Well, he was back in the 70s when he was like doing rodeo and construction and stuff. He had like an old van, and he's like, I'd travel around and do construction and rodeos. And then he upgraded to a truck with a camper on it, but not a cab over, just like a tall camper shell. And he lived in that for a while.
I love the camper shell life.
He's like, all right, my kid's into this. What did I do wrong?
That camper shell life is awesome.
But his was a camper, but just didn't have the cab over component.
Yeah. Well, oh, it was a camper. Like it wasn't like a camper shell. It was like
it was a camper
bed. And
like he had a bed and like a. And, well, it's all the same because I almost bought one like it. But it's so basically, it's got the two benches.
Yeah, it's just
that turn into the bed. But there's a stove and an ice box. They didn't have the Dometic fridges back then. But so
It's got that wild like old kind of same siding like your RV.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
He rocked that for a while, probably years, because he would travel for work and rodeos, and so that's how he rolled. I don't know why he ever questioned why I do things, but
you're like, where do you think I got it from?
It's in the blood, Dad. And he's like, I know.
Damn it,
Sam. You started a bar company.
Yeah. Don't you have a tagline for it? What's our tagline?
Oh, well, they're handmade, right?
Yeah, they're handmade.
All handmade.
All handmade.
I know. I really do think you should use it. Bar you eat. It's a hand job. I mean,
for your mouth.
That's too much. You can't fit that on the package. Right. Why did you start making these bars? I do want to know.
Like, all right.
People might give. Never mind. I don't give a shit. I'm just kidding. Tell me.
If I start talking, are you going to stop me again? All right. Bar you eat. I used to be a guide in Iceland. I mentioned that before.
People followed you?
Huh?
People followed you?
They did. I wasn't quite sure why, though, because I had no idea what I was doing. To be very clear, I was underqualified to be guiding people. Mm-hmm. At one point, someone even told me I was possibly the worst guide ever. I didn't come very prepared. I didn't bring water or snacks or anything. But
is that why you started making bars?
No, the cafe we partnered with had bars, and people were like, you should be bringing these. I'm like, I know, you're right. They're the best.
Did you ever. Not like their bars?
They were the best.
But no. Is that why you ripped off the recipe?
I tried. They wouldn't give me the recipe. Legitimately, but, so I wasn't trying to start a bar company. But I was leaving Iceland. I was like, can I have the recipe?
Is this cafe suing you?
No, our bars are quite different. I'll be honest.
But you stole them from them.
I didn't. I was inspired. Mm. Their bars are so good. They had these rhubarb seed bars. Mm. Phenomenal. Like, best snack bar you've ever had.
I told one of my teachers I was inspired by the other students' writing when I stole their paper and turned it in.
I didn't copy it. I was just inspired.
Yeah. They're like, we saw this paper last year. I was like, yeah, I was inspired by it.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like an artist.
Look, it's different. It has
You're an artist.
It has my name on it.
You're so abstract.
It says bar you eat.
Well, I was I was not inspired, but I had thought making bars might be cool. When I moved back to the States and I was in
Colorado. By the divine hand.
Yeah. A higher power really.
Okay.
Pushed me to do that. No, I was just making. I had coached sports and liked nutrition. I liked an active lifestyle. I wanted a different snack. There wasn't a good bar out there in the U.S. And I was back in Colorado.
There still really isn't.
Well, there's Bar You Eat.
There's Bar You Eat. Yeah, way to support your friend.
Don't be an asshole. There's Bar You Eat.
Did I interrupt you?
No.
Okay, go ahead. But you started, when you started making them, you had like a bike route, didn't you? It was like you kind of biked around and handed them out.
No, I worked at a paddleboard shop. And so we just did stand-up paddleboard rentals for the river. And I had a mason jar and just a little side hustle. My childhood best friend, Jason, he's always been artistic and creative. So I kind of just continued to ask him for favors. Can I get a design? Can I get a logo? Can I get a poster?
You sold them in bags at that time, right?
People came and brought their own reusable bags, their own Tupperware. They love that there wasn't plastic packaging. They like the texture, the ingredients. They're really simple.
Seriously, you guys did start from renting a kitchen, making bars, to now
Got our own facility. Team helping us out.
What was that process like? How did you get the facility? How did you make all that happen? Because it took you a long time.
It took time. And I would say that we didn't really have a hard plan. Didn't really know what we were doing. Just kind of wanted to see if it would gain traction, if people liked it. From those early days of just making them late night and building momentum, it involved a lot of farmers markets, going out and sampling, just cold calling, going door to door, trying to get our bars into places. And yeah, people were really into it. It started off as a bad user experience. We've always used compostable packaging. We start with the mason jar. People valued that. And we learned that although the user experience was not great, people were buying them. They liked the product. So it took us some time, but eventually we got, they call them tea bags. And you got these, you know, like a literal tea bag, the bag that your tea comes in, sealed on three sides. That's what we got for our first bar wrappers. And so hand feeding those bars into those wrappers, you're talking like he'd be doing thousands of bars a day. We've been doing fundraising and trying to get some help behind us to back it up. The idea, the product, the story, really just selling.
You wrote grants though. Right.
We've been recipients of some grants. We've been recipients of some business loans. And
what was that like? I mean, so had you written grants before?
No, I've not written grants before.
Did you write these grants?
Those first couple did write. We got a lot of help. We've got a great network of people who help out, from my partner Olivia to other.
She's your fiance.
She is my fiance.
You're getting married. She's your fiance.
We are my future wife.
Your future wife.
Future wife.
Have you said that before?
Yes.
When?
It's my preference over fiance. I just don't think I'm fancy enough to say fiance.
Yeah, you sound dumb when you say it. You should say future wife.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's a weird word.
It was impressive watching you go through grant writing process. And, you know, even before I think you had approached investors, you were already kind of going through the grant writing process, right? Or was that at the same time?
Grant writing started off. We're in Northwest Colorado. It is a ski town, but it's rural Colorado. It's coal country. So there's a lot of opportunities for business and industry come about. So we had a lot of help from individuals in our community and from the state trying to encourage business and growth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wish I could give you a more exciting story behind it, but just a really supportive community that allowed us this opportunity and still grinding away. It's cool. Steamboat Springs, a lot of entrepreneurship out of there for this little town. It's got, I mean, for us coming up there, you've got companies like Big Agnes, Honey Stinger, Smart Wool, Hollow Paddleboards, Moots Bikes. It's impressive, the companies that have been started and grown.
Fish Pond's officially there now.
Fish Pond is now in Steamboat. Eagle Creek is now in Steamboat.
It's a great place to be. It's close to Denver.
But not too close. About 3 hours from Denver.
Yeah, but it's close enough that you can go get to the airport relatively easy. Mm-hmm.
And we're right by the airport.
It's really cool. It's kind of, how far is it from Boulder?
4 hours from Boulder?
Yeah.
It's pronounced Boulder.
Yeah.
Boulder.
Boulder. Boulder.
Boulder.
Boulder.
It's kind of like fiance.
I live in Boulder. Yeah, I'm feeling.
I love Boulder.
I really like, you know, I'm a straight up local. I've been here for like 6 months.
Can't trust really. Your face, okay?
Old guard.
I'm a Colorado native, and I can't stand this stuff.
Yeah. Cantrell was living in Ridgeway at one point in time. That place has changed.
I love that town.
Still.
I still love it.
Current iteration.
I just can't afford it. Can't afford it. Average home in Ouray County is $900,000.
What kind of people used to visit Ouray or Ridgeway? What kind of people
Nobody.
Used to visit Ridgeway? Nobody.
Yeah, that's no. It was like where you stopped for gas.
Yeah. Like a lot of people still don't know. Texans know Ouray because it's got like Jeep trails and Jeep trails. Texans love to do that in the summertime.
They like Jeep trails. We like jeeping.
And I ask people a lot and they're like, oh, Ridgeway, where's that? And I'm like, you know where Ouray is? And they're like, Ouray. Yeah, I know where Ouray is.
Ouray.
And just for everyone out there, it's Ouray. And I'm like, you know, if you go about 10 miles north, there's a stoplight on your way to Montrose. Like, yeah, Mike, that's Ridgeway. And that was it. Nobody visits. Nobody visited. Like, good, just people in the town. It's different.
That's happening everywhere.
Yeah, it's just
I didn't even live in Wimberley, but I visited Wimberley enough and hung out here enough with Josh and the fam that I could go into town, get a sandwich, get a beer, and by the end of the month, like, I knew everyone. Everyone knew me. I could come back 6 months later and they still knew you. It was crazy. Wimberley was a small town.
Small towns are rapidly changing. It's my childhood memories of Ridgeway. My grandfather had a ranch there when I was like 8, after he sold a lot of the property he had in Telluride. He went down to Ridgeway. He was going away from the hippies. He's like, Telluride's got too many fucking hippies in it. I'm moving out of here. I remember when he first went to Telluride, it was in the 40s. And when they went up there, it was like people would say, oh, the Texans are coming to town. And their Texas week was my grandfather coming to town with the family. Like, nobody was vacationing there. It was not a vacation destination. The ski area wasn't even a thing. None of the ski folk, town folk had lived there. It was coming off of being a mining town.
The Box Canyon.
Yeah, but he loved it for jeeping. He liked to go up there and go jeeping. And he would go jeeping, and they went into Tomboy, and like they had to clear the roads up to Tomboy Mine. And when they got up there, the mine had been shut down, and all of the furniture was in a big pile out in the center of the thing, and nobody had gone up there at that point in time. But what's interesting is like as communities change and evolve, what I will say to the credit of the town that you live in, Sam Steamboat, is you guys are. That community is pushing back and is at least drawing some lines, and it's making room for small companies like yourself, small local businesses to be there that are locally owned, locally operated, locally founded. As an outsider, I see that as being the case. Is that really how it is?
I think so. It's hard in any ski town. There's certainly some pushback, but the things that drew me to Steamboat in the first place, not many towns have it, but although it's a tourist town, Steamboat, I think Crested Butte is another one of them. Genuine community who loves Steamboat. Mm-hmm. Whether it was someone who lived there full time, had a second home, or just visited, you could tell that much. That stood out to me over anything on the I-70 corridor from the Vales to the Breckenridges. Like, Steamboat had community, culture, and love for it. And so there's a lot that's happened in the past as far as short-term rentals, second homeowners that have kind of created a rift and a divide. But the root of Steamboat is definitely trying their best to keep locals there, get families to start there, grow there, work locally. It's not a town that we have tourism. Tourism is a critical part of the community, but we're not 100% dependent on it. I listed off all those businesses, like good paying jobs in this town, cool businesses to work for. So Steamboat's trying to fight back. The community's trying to fight back. Just represent those individuals working hard, living there full time, whether they are working in tourism, hospitality, restaurant, or if they're working for these local businesses.
Well, you guys have a lot of space. Versus like an Aspen, Vail,
we want to keep that space, though. That's the tough thing in a mountain town is I go on a hike in town and I love getting up there and like seeing our little downtown, seeing a bunch of open space, seeing the ranches all around us, seeing the ski hill. Like, I love that open space. So I'm not pro development. I know development is inevitable to a certain degree. And I want people who work in Steamboat to be able to live in Steamboat. And it's a tough dance to make that happen.
Are you running for mayor?
Absolutely not.
You sound like you're running for mayor.
No.
City council?
No, none of that.
That's development hard. Council.
None of that.
Development committee.
I applaud all those people who do it.
County clerk.
Here's why I care. I have a business there. I want to own a home there. I want my employees to be able to own a home there and work there.
You're never going to own a home there. They're too expensive.
That's how it feels. Don't tell Olivia that. She's going to make me leave.
Where are you going to move to?
I don't know. A van?
Oh, fucking van life, dude. There you go. I'm in. Olivia wants to do van life?
Dude, we can have a van life caravan. Come on.
I'm always in.
He's like, I'm already in.
Like, I live in one right now. Like, it's not a giant leap for me.
You're like, get off my bandwagon, all right?
I like truck camper life.
Truck camper life is way cooler than van life.
Fuck yeah, it is. Like, you got a truck. Hey, yeah. First of all, you got a truck.
Yeah. I have a Tacoma. Let me just reiterate. I went from the Subaru to the Tacoma. I got a hard shell there. So I do sleep in the back of my truck. If we're looking for street cred,
that's Colorado.
Thank you.
No,
thank you.
Like if he was drinking the hardcore Kool-Aid, he'd have one of those overland systems.
He would.
Car camping.
That's all overlanding is car camping.
I know. So,
but like way more expensive.
Way more expensive.
Yeti forever changed the world.
Yeah.
Yeti? Yes. Seriously. I mean, they told the world that like all the things we know we can make better charge way more than they should be charged. And because of lifestyle, people will buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You think I can do that with Bar You Eat? Like right now you can buy Bar You Eat for $3, but if we made it a lifestyle brand, you think people would buy our bars for $8?
$7.50.
Should have just stuck all four of them together.
Yeah, like the
bar. You're going to need to make them heavier.
The bar of overlanding.
You need to call them artisanal.
Overlanding bar.
Scratch made artisanal energy supplements.
That's a different market. That's not the overland market, but that's a whole nother market.
So no, if you want to go overland, you got to make them lighter.
Yeah, you got to make them
ultra light.
You got to make them really light. It's just the bag.
Yeah,
it's just the bag. Yeah. We've condensed them into a pill form.
It's an almond.
Oh yeah, the pill form. I mean,
an almond.
The overlanding bar.
An almond. It's a long almond, so it's a little deceptive. You're like, it's an almond. No. It's a bar.
It's an almond bar
for overlanding.
It's an ultralight overlanding almond bar.
There is 4 calories.
I actually forget it. Like, just make them hand selected almonds. Like we sift through 1,000 almonds a day and find the almond that is the lightest, most calorie dense almond.
I think we need to add welding into the mix. How can we incorporate our welding ability?
You could
go back to your reusable containers and just weld up a little box.
No. You put them in little carbon containers. So they're it's like
carbon
a little
fiber.
carbon fiber wrapped almonds.
We're going to go the full opposite direction of sustainability in the environment. We're going
it's a carbon fiber wrapped. The lightest, strongest almond package that you could possibly take on the trail with you. And you can connect them onto your Molly board.
Yeah.
That's the key.
They're modular and they connect onto your board.
And you need to it's got to be incorporated into leveling your truck when you're sleeping.
Okay. So I load 12 Bar You Eats onto the right side of my car and 4 onto the left. And I find that that gives me the right balance.
That's what you need
on my truck.
Only $7.50 a bar.
Yeah. Well, if I put 3 boxes in the back and 2 in the front, it really smooths out the ride going up the trail.
It's a versatile product.
It really is.
That's like that WF Strong story about the rancher who goes to New York and
that's a good one.
Brings his truck in. I'm going to butcher it. You remember it?
Oh yeah. How does that thing go? That's really good.
So this rancher, he's from Texas, comes into this big expensive bank in New York City with his truck. He's like, hey, you know, I'm a little low on cash these days, but I've got this truck fully paid off, $80,000 truck. I'll leave it here if you could front me the money. I'll leave it with here. Gives him the whole rundown and interest. He's like, I think that deal will work for me. And so gets approved for it. He leaves. He comes back 1 week later, brings the cash, interest, gets his truck back. And gentleman, he's like, I'm not really supposed to ask this, but I did some digging while you were gone and you don't need this money. Why? You've got land. You've got other vehicles. You got a whole business. Why'd you do this? He goes, oh, well, I didn't want to pay $100 to park there at the airport. So I figured I'd just bring it here and leave it with you guys instead. And just that slow, simple Texas where it's like you underestimate them, but they're 2 steps ahead of you.
Getting to this good story? So Sam and I'm taking him to Yellowstone and to Idaho for like a trip. And I meet him in Durango, Colorado, and I'm like, hey, man, this is so perfect because this is just like, so this is an East Coast guy's version of trying to pull a Texan move in New York, and this is what happens. So the simple Texan pulls his deal off in New York. Well, Sam, I meet him, and this is before he even knew the Texan move. I meet him, and I'm like, hey, man, so we met in Durango, and he jumped in the car with me. And we were headed to Yellowstone and we were going to meet his now partner good friend at the time. And I don't think this is the first time I met Jason. We're going to meet Jason in Yellowstone. Then we're going to Idaho to go fishing. And this was the first time I think you'd flied fished and Jason.
Yep.
But so we get to Durango and I'm like, hey man, we can just go to the end of town. You just park your car. We're going to be gone about it's like 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
We can take it to the airport, yep, or wherever.
$10 a day or whatever it was. Put it at the airport. He's like, no. I got an idea. So he goes to this shop. And he's like, I'm going to put it in the shop for some work. And we're going
to
leave.
I was just going to get an oil change.
So, yeah, so he puts his, tries to put his car in the shop.
Right, do you mind? I need an oil change. But I'm going to be gone for a couple weeks. Is that fine? Yeah. You guys can look. I got these two things that are like a little wonky. Been on the road for a bit. But I just need the oil change. Let me know what you find.
I just want you to know at this point in time, I told him this is a dumb idea.
Brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah. Let's play this out. So what happened next? I needed
the oil change.
So what happens next? He gets a call. He's like, oh, it's the shop. And they're like, your oil change is done. And I think they had something to say about the wonky things. And he's like, And I'm like, driving. He's like, yeah. Cool. If you could just look at that or, just maybe like give me a quote on that and get back to me. I'm just listening to
you. You know, sometimes mechanics, they talk really fast. They've got power tools going on behind them. I couldn't hear well. I'm like, thanks for the oil change. Yeah, check those out for me. Let me know what you find. Give me a quote. Like, just keep me posted, but just take a look.
Yeah. And his friend Jason, like, works on cars.
He built his own car. Yeah.
Yeah, he built a race car. So, like, Jason's calling him. He's like, they say I need this and this. And Jason's like, you don't need that and that. He gets another phone call.
They're like, don't worry. We fixed that thing that we were looking at.
And they found another problem. And he's like, yeah, well, cool. Call me and give me a quote.
Let me know. Give me a quote, though.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much.
the long story short is we get back. And all the time, like, I'm like, dude, this is bad. How much did you have to pay?
I feel like I spent $2,000 to park my car.
Oh, my God.
How long did you have the Subaru after?
Afterwards?
Yeah.
Oh, I had that Subaru probably another 4 years.
Whatever. Maybe. He overpaid for the work that was done. It was
I hate to bring up something.
It's far enough away that we can laugh about this
to park it.
I'm just saying, like,
I didn't have to pay that $200
You might have got a couple extra years out of that Subaru because of it.
Oh my God, no. Nope.
It was great. It was a great deal.
I clearly remember Jason saying it was not a great deal. I clearly remember Jason saying, I could have done that. You overpaid. This and this didn't need to happen.
It was almost a great idea.
Almost.
It was a concept terrible idea.
Yeah. I mean, that I needed the oil change.
We had a really good trip, though.
We did.
We could have gone to, like, Europe for the amount that you spent parking your car.
That was expensive.
Yeah.
Live and learn.
Oh, can we do a bar tasting?
Yeah. Where's your overlanding rig? There should be underneath the tire there.
Well, the bars are on top of these Yeti Go boxes right here, which are ready to be loaded into my overlanding rig.
You guys hungry?
Always.
All right.
You need a cutting board?
No. These are just going to get thrown at you. You guys have tried them. You can try whichever ones you want.
I've never had any of these. This is the first time.
Yep. You're full of shit.
That's true.
We've got four flavors of bar you eat. We have our original. It has almonds, cashews. It's delicious. Comes in a green wrapper. We've got our oatmeal raisin. Cinnamon raisin kind of says good morning. It's like a cookie, but without all the bad stuff.
Is there cinnamon in here?
There is cinnamon. Mm. Yeah.
That really comes through. I
get more breakfast than like
this one's my favorite one.
I can tell because you won't pass it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Peanuts and cherries is our own little take of a PB&J.
This is perfect. I think this might be my favorite one.
Peanuts, tart cherries, and then the coffee pecan. We made this for Texans who visit Colorado. Texas pecans in here. Light coffee roast.
We love pecans in Texas.
You love Texans in Texas.
We love Texans outside of Texas.
All of it. Yeah. So, got these. I'll throw those at you. There you go.
I feel like the coffee one to me has got like these sort of rich, dark notes. The pecan, you get a little bit of like tannin from the pecans. You get that like nice coffee. Mm. Yeah.
Looks like there's other stuff.
This one's my favorite one.
I couldn't pick a favorite, honestly. I like them all. I mean, if I was going to gun to my head, peanut and cherry.
Why would somebody put a gun to your head for the bar?
People are weird, man. Sam might do it later. I'm like, tell me your favorite. Like, peanuts and cherry, man. Lay off. It's a bar.
It's not a bar. This is my life, dude.
It's a bar you eat.
I mean, just called my life on there.
This is a bar.
Where did you get the name from?
Bar You Eat.
Where's the name from?
It's not just a bar.
It's a Bar You Eat.
You don't want to talk about the name?
It's a story.
It's a lifestyle. What kind of bar would you classify these as?
Granola bar.
Okay.
That's a great question, though, because...
It's a granola bar?
It's a granola bar. We've settled on granola bar, and I say that and...
I thought it was a snack bar.
It was a snack bar. It was a nutrition bar. It was an energy bar.
It's a granola bar.
It's a granola bar. That's what they are. That's what we're calling it. But it can be anything, honestly. We've decided it's a granola bar.
Because you have to have an answer to that question.
My
you
Friday, do. My Friday night date. Coffee's and pecan.
Coffee and pecan.
It can be anything, a little coffee and pecan.
I love peanuts. I love peanuts.
Say it fast.
I just dip and loud.
The name. You asked about the name.
Yeah.
Bar You Eat. Yeah, we made a bar that you eat, and so I'm a pretty simple, literal guy like those Texans who are a little bit more clever than you think they are, and that's all it is.
Is that where you're going with this?
No, no. Bar You Eat, we have a chairlift, an old two-person chairlift at Steamboat Resort called Bar You E. We're in Texas, so you can visualize the cattle brand, Bar You E. Mm-hmm. And so...
Does it have a cattle brand on that lift?
No. Our sticker's on there with the cattle brand.
You made it.
We made it.
Are you making beef bars?
Not yet. But okay. That name, Bar You E, that ranch, the Warner family, is one of the founding families of Steamboat.
Yep. Bar You E Ranch.
Was their ranch for that founding family of Steamboat. And it's just a really cool way for us to tie in the history of Steamboat from the agriculture to the recreation.
Little tip of the hat.
Yes, sir. There. So Bar You E, chairlift, and then had this bar. Literal simple guy. I'm like, man, that's my favorite lift.
How high were you when you came up with that?
How what?
How high were you when you came up with that?
I was about...
And were you in your Subaru?
Oh, no. I was about somewhere around 9,500 feet up on Mount Warner, sitting on Bar UE chairlift.
So they say everybody in Colorado is high. Sam, thanks for being here. Thanks for playing. Thanks for bringing bars. The stories.
Maybe you'll be in Steamboat soon.
Oh, yeah, with the rest of the Texans.
Yeah.
We're terraforming you guys. You guys know that, right? I just want to be clear.
That's why everyone's
You have Whataburger. Once the Buc-ee's is complete, we will be showing up and taking Colorado back. It will be suitable for us then.
Well, like Guy Clark, I'm an adopted Texan. I've got a passport, so I think I'll be safe.
Thanks for tuning in to the Bunkhouse Podcast, proudly brought to you by the fine folks over at Spoke Hollow Outdoors. Looking for an adventure in hunting, fishing, camping, foraging, or general outdoorsing spaces? Then we are your kind of people. We offer outdoor skills classes and hunting and fishing trips for all skill levels. Many of these fantastic experiences happen right here at Spoke Hollow Ranch, located just outside of Austin, Texas. Feel like traveling a little farther? Check out the various Spoke Hollow outposts and hosted haunts around the good old US of A. Interested in learning more? Hop over to SpokeHollow.com. That's SpokeHollow.com. Book a trip, join a class, tell them I sent you, and who knows, maybe I'll see you at the bunkhouse.